This is AVXL episode 23, recorded August 26, 2016.
Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. Oh my goodness, we're going to talk about new CPUs and why you care about those. Where the Olympics have been stored. Oh my goodness, the ultimate home theater for Star Trek fans. And by the way, we got Pixel Shift, 4K Mayhem, and an 80s festival of Blu-rays. And for those of you who are staring blankly at your car stereo right now, about to run into the autonomously driven Tesla in front of you, yes, we'll be talking about some practical home theater screen buys, too. Because, you know, sometimes you just want to buy a delete expletive television.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
And this is AVXL. Oh, my goodness.
It's Friday.
You're Olympic'd out.
Oh, yes. 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 Thoroughly burned out on everything at this point. I've seen enough. Way too much volleyball. That seemed to be the majority of all the coverage. I am kind of glad it is giving me a break from nonstop every day. There was always something cool to watch. I mean, what a great problem to have, though. So, you know.
Friend of mine twigged me to that I wish I'd twigged to early enough to still have the energy to deal with it was the fact that the BBC, for example, had pretty much all the sports, lots and lots of all the sports. And
you mean on their general broadcast coverage? Or
yeah, but people were spoofing into the BBC coverage because unlike the NBC stuff, which was so heavily skewed towards ratings, they had more
variety.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the word for it.
Well, that's another reason I stayed away from the live TV presentations, especially in primetime, because everything was delayed.
Well,
and it was very focused on certain events and certain people, and I prefer more generalized coverage. And that's I still give credit to NBC for that app of theirs, because they did provide everything through that app, every event, live or delayed or however you wanted to watch it. Decent quality. It did require a good network connection and a login for a paid provider, but
we didn't have NBC or Comcast, so we ended up finding that it was funny to see the NBC trying to create viral
videos. I think you probably suffered
then
trying to find content.
Well, we found stuff, but it was like, you know, how many times can I click through YouTube to try to find this stuff?
Nah.
I mean, I got to see Hella Morales, you know, and I got to see like 45 seconds, like the last 45 seconds of Hella Morales, beat Sayori Yoshida of Japan, which was just an incredible wrestling match. You know, Usain Bolt was...
That guy runs, that guy wins.
Yeah, that was... If you're again staring at the radio in disgust about to run into the rear end of the Tesla that's being autonomously driven in front of you.
Slow down.
Even if you hate... Yeah, slow down. Look up.
Dodge.
Yeah, be angry at us while looking at the traffic in front of you. But the... Man, if you haven't seen Usain Bolt running the 100-yard dash or the 100-meter dash or the 4x100
or the 200, I think
else,
he did
as
well.
Just 100-meter, pardon me. Just search for it. It is one of the most astonishing things you'll ever see, just in terms of wow.
Human performance.
Oh my goodness, just incredible! There's so many incredible stories in the Women's Olympics. It was great seeing Michael Phelps, that other male swimmer who behaved like an asshat.
I think he got it in the end. If there's anything,
he lost
like
every single sponsor.
Karmic justice,
but he did get picked up by a cough drop
yes.
company. And that's all I'm going to say because I was so disgusted by the cough drop company and him. I'm just going to let that go.
Yeah. If there's any tip to pull away from that specific event,
pee in a convenience store.
If you go crazy in the evening, you know, just admit it.
Yeah.
It's so much easier just to, because then it's like, yeah, nothing else to say. Of course. Okay, yeah. I was out.
We have all done stupid things, but blaming an entire nation for you being a jerk is
too much.
Unnecessary.
I will say, though, the 4K coverage was hit or miss. It really depended on hardware and other things for streaming Olympic stuff. However, the content I did see looked pretty good, and I'm really looking forward to where they can do that live.
Oh, my goodness.
Cannot wait.
We got a secret viewer tip
Ooh.
I cannot
secret
reveal
knowledge?
The source of the secret viewer tip, but this may be our last discussion of Olympics, at least until the Winter Olympics.
Yep.
In a couple of years. Off the record, listen to your Olympic show. All the content is in full recorded resolution on Spectralogic tape libraries. You didn't get this from me.
Understood. And looking at the Spectralogic website, create new knowledge at 13 quadrillion calculations per second. Apparently they are the masters, or one of the good companies for doing incredibly large scale
deep
data
storage
backup.
For exponential data.
That sounds like my NASA situation.
I want
my
a
NASA
t-shirt
situation
that
at home,
says that. But basically the idea is, right, you know, exponential data growth. We dealt with this even all the way back at when we were doing DLTV, when we filled the first NAS, and we were like, how do we upgrade the hard drives in the first NAS? And back then the answer was you buy a second NAS and you transfer everything off the first NAS to the second NAS, and then you put bigger hard drives in the first NAS. And then the revision 3, we were storing terabytes. It was crazy.
Same thing when you're trying to like create an archive of, say, DVDs, and then you switch up to Blu-rays and you realize, wow, the data requirements are, they just jumped sevenfold or whatever per title. And if you want to keep that original quality, mm-hmm. which would, if you're recording the Olympics in 4 and 8K, ideally, you're saving the original raw stuff coming out, so you can always go back and redo it, relook at it, maybe run it through the workflow one more time with a tweak here and there. And that just requires tremendous amounts of storage, and good. I'm glad that's all sitting there somewhere. Now maybe they can get some of that onto the Olympics website permanently.
Be nice.
Yeah.
Spectralogix, I'm looking at their corporate milestones. The first to automate tape technology in a library. And if you've never seen a tape robot moving libraries at a television studio or a master control center, it's a pretty crazy thing to watch, where they have hundreds and hundreds of tapes. They do like library services, but it's pretty amazing when you start realizing. That was a big theme at Intel Developer Forum a few weeks ago. The idea that, you know, a typical human by like 2020 or 2025 is going to be generating like a gigabyte and a half of data a day. Your autonomous vehicle by 2025 might be 4 gigabytes a day. A fully automated factory may be storing, 1,000 gigabytes a day or 1,000,000 gigabytes a day, like ridiculous numbers. The idea that being able to scale storage...
add more tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also kind of find it somewhat nostalgic that tapes are still a big thing nowadays. Like a lot of the companies that host data, you still use hard drives.
Right.
Because we haven't quite hit that tipping point in terms of cost for SSDs, cost parity, let alone just deep storage with tape systems where you can put tons of data on those.
Well, at some point it becomes, and that's kind of like two competing ideas, right? On one end, you've got these tape libraries, and on the other end, you have something like, Backblaze or, Google or, Amazon, S3, where they have warehouses full of racks of computers attached to as many hard drives as they can stuff in there. If you've never read the Backblaze stuff on hard drives and hard drive reliability, it is spectacularly useful.
I read that anytime I'm about to buy a hard drive, actually. But I kind of dig that.
Spectra Tfinity Exascale Edition, the world's highest capacity. This thing's crazy. It looks like a bus, comma, city. From 50 to 53,460 LTO slots, you can store over 320 petabytes or 801 petabytes of compressed data. With up to 120 drives, you can transfer data up to 155.5 terabytes per hour or 388.8 terabytes per hour compressed using LTO7 tape technology.
Hey, now I see why the Olympics decided to dump, or at least NBC is dumping their coverage that way.
Hey, so. They're used by National Geographic. I don't know. I thought that was kind of fascinating.
But I think that's a problem. Anybody who's dealing with high-quality content, be it pictures, video, anything you're doing.
It gets big really, really
quickly. Being able to hang on to that original recording or the original file before, so you can always go back and copy that again and edit to delight is
edit
key.
Edit to delight. So I mentioned IDF, Intel Developer Forum. They didn't talk a lot about video or computer processors for the most part, except for a brief segment where they were obsessed with 4K. They probably spent 6 minutes saying 4K over and over again.
4K!
Or they had the hip-looking younger guy on stage with his baseball cap talking about 4K video. But But the big thing they kept hammering on is that Kaby Lake, which is the next generation Intel CPUs coming out this fall, are all ready for 4K, native HDCP 2.2 support, and 4K hardware that handles HEVC main 10 10-bit and VP9 10-bit video decoding all on board in the processor.
Oh, nice.
They're also, which if you're a home theater PC kind of person, which is getting harder and harder the farther away we get from Windows 7 for any of a number of reasons. Oh, by the way, I have been playing around with the Mac Blu-ray player on Windows.
Oh, there is one.
Ooh. There is one. There are two Blu-ray players for Windows now.
I'd love to see the software you actually watch a movie on. Anyway.
It's it's definitely software. they also showed Blizzard's Overwatch being played on the Encore, the CPU graphics, the Intel graphics on a Core i5 XPS laptop.
Huh.
So I thought that was really interesting.
The CPU's graphics chip or
the graphics
straight
built into the CPU.
Okay. Because right? I use that in my notebook, the Intel graphics. And
not to play Blizzard's Overwatch, which is not the most taxing game, and I'm sure they didn't have the settings
on. Like
with,
4K but, output and blah, blah,
but
blah,
they
blah.
Were doing 3D video gaming on the onboard processor. Yeah, and of course they announced Project Alloy, which is their new VR platform, which is going to be one of the things we did on Tech Thing this week. We talked to Norman Chan from over at Tested, about the HTC Vive and the Oculus Rift, PlayStation VR and what's coming on in that area.
I've only had very brief moments with those systems.
You know, they can be, some of the games are really compelling and they're super simple right now. And I'm really curious to see what they turn into as they get more and more complicated. I do not know how I found this link, but I was laughing.
Late night surfing.
Well, it was first I stumbled across the Southern Motion Home Theater furniture or the Southern Motion Home Theater seating. Which led me to fourseating.com. This is not an advertisement.
That's a good company name, though. That kind of
fourseating.com.
No, Southern Motion. I'm like, what? That could be. What is this referring to?
Well, I remember the Lazy Boy stuff back in the '90s, where they started putting electronics or power supplies or whatever. We modded a Lazy Boy back at a show, but these are crazy because they have they're designed to power adjustable headrests. Power recline, dual USB ports for charging your devices, fold-down tables, made in the United States, fold-down consoles. I just thought it's always interesting to see some of the crazy, they do them as standalone chairs. They do them with these sort of, giant, crazy-looking couches where there's three reclining sections and these powered headrests. And so I just thought they were amusing if you're looking for something completely over the top.
I have had good listening experiences in seats with all of the speakers integrated, things like that. But
this
is
just furniture, man.
Yeah.
Furniture with optional LED lighting.
The lighting part, maybe not so much, but hey, put a charging USB port on a seat or something.
Yeah, I suddenly want USB ports and power ports in all of my furniture.
A minimum of 2 amps, please.
And cup holders, if you're thinking about your dedicated home theater. But part of the reason I started looking at home theater seats or multimedia sofas, that was the other one. It got me wondering, what do you sit in when you're watching movies or Robert's dreaded Olympics? Yeah, we have a couple of couches that are inconveniently arranged perpendicular to the screen. So at some point, I'm going to sneak in a third couch or a chair, and there will be blood as my wife and I negotiate the rearrangement of the living room so that I can have the preferred seating that I would like.
I have my TV on a full motion mount, so I typically just roll my damn office chair back a little bit, throw my feet up on a couch or a bed nearby, and just sit there like that and adjust the lights accordingly.
Up until a month ago, I had a couch where I had the perfect spot dead center on the screen.
So. Lab-wise, I literally have stuff on tables and chairs, and I can kill all the lights in the room when I need to do, really focused, being able to see those black levels.
But you're rocking your office chair at home.
Oh, totally.
You're super comfy.
Yeah. I often never go in the living room to watch stuff. It's always crowded and people are watching crap I hate. So the joy of roommates. I'd rather pet the dogs and animals than watch most TV.
I'm going to go play Bejeweled.
Nope, not playing that either, but still.
Still.
I did sneak in some Doom. I am not certain if I finished that game. That's totally off topic. But
you should finish it on the home theater screen in the living room.
I've got the best TV in my room right now in the house, so...
Well, I started when you start gaming on a 110-inch screen, it's more awesome.
Oh, That is effectively the setup we did a 1080p projector in a nice darkened bar room at my buddy's house with a powered screen system. And he uses that thing constantly, either for gaming on his console, and it's got wireless. It's one of those, I think it's the 3600E Epson with the wireless HD streaming kit that comes with it. So basically the pods on the side somewhere where you connect all your devices, and it just streams that content right to the projector. And you don't need a fancy setup. I mean, I've pointed projectors at walls or whatever, but anything from console gaming to movies and stuff. Like this week, I've been getting a lot of questions like, you got to, what is the $500 LCD that's going to match plasma quality at some ridiculous size? I'm like, that's a tough request. And I like, if you have $500 and you're going from like plasma to LCD, I would probably tell you to just skip the LCD altogether if you're looking for that kind of image quality, and go get yourself a 720p projector for under $500. And you will probably enjoy that more than, you know, if you're expecting the world out of a $500 LCD at certain sizes, at least. There are some great ones out there, but if you're not getting an OLED and you're not getting a great plasma picture quality out of that $500 LCD, generally speaking. So, oh, yes. I see a delivery of mine being picked up as we speak.
Excellent.
Oh, I'm kissing goodbye to the KS9800 today. I must say, I will let it go. I'll talk about that at the end of the show.
A giant television is going home.
The most complicated boxing.
Speaking of complicated, CE Pro has a write-up of perhaps the most over-the-top, you know, moving away from you know, my relatively...
Sitting in my bedroom watching 4K TV.
or sitting in my, you know, living room. They have a crazy Star Trek home theater tag on its, like, you know, $1.5 million. And I think $1 million of it is on Star Trek merchandise. And the rest of it is on the home theater. But JBL Synthesis sound system, which you would normally find in a full-size commercial theater, a Kaleidoscape media server, which is the, you know, high-end version of ripping your own.
They just closed shop, unfortunately.
Kaleidoscape shut down?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Kaleidoscape...
That was a very niche market. So,
it was a very niche market, and they got... So Kaleidoscape...
I don't want to jump away from the Star Trek theater.
Well, you know, this is an interesting conversation, right? Because the Kaleidoscape was a setup to create legal, like, we're not going to get sued by the DMCA system, so that you could rip your DVDs to
bend over backwards to protect the content as you archive it to a secure system. And
and these were like $10,000 servers. These were not
the ones you really wanted. Were yeah, they had entry level products too, but to be
for
able
how
to
how much like $3,000 or something.
Yeah.
You know, they were not inexpensive, and then when Blu-ray came out, either the studios or the Blu-ray consortium or the MPEG whatever consortium, we don't really know who, but they're basically like, yeah, you can rip the Blu-rays, but you can't play them back unless the Blu-ray's in the drive. And that was pretty much like,
what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, oh, they'll gladly sell you then a secured 300 disc changer to make sure that disc is always present, so it can then play the file that's been ripped at, you know,
yeah,
near instant performance and stuff. But yeah, it was. Kaleidoscape went out of their way to make workarounds and everything to please everybody, and right. And they made great products. But yeah. But looking at this,
this theater.
Yeah, I gotta say, this is just somebody who wanted, apparently, the
deck of the USS Enterprise,
pretty much
the bridge.
And if that's what you want to sit in while
the,
you're
the
watching
new generation
your movies,
version.
More power to you, man.
I guess it was originally reported in the Wall Street Journal. But
honestly,
if
you saw this in a home you were about to buy, though, would you buy that house?
You know, I'm never going to be buying a house that's worth that much. So it's kind of a moot question.
That's like, for me personally, as much as I love Star Trek, I don't want to be sitting in a home theater.
Well, this guy
around
okay.
The Enterprise.
So this gentleman named Mark Bell has a lot of money. Fell in love with Star Trek when he was 10.
Understandable.
Quote, when he chanced upon a 24-hour Star Trek marathon on TV, staying up late to watch the whole thing. I think we can all relate to that, like, you know, being obsessed with something. He's got an interesting mix, right? He's, you know, he's like Mark Bell Capital with his finance. He's got a company. He's the chairman of a company that manufactures satellite components for NASA. He produced Broadway's Jersey Boys and Rock of Ages.
Sounds like a well-rounded individual.
It sounds like a well-rounded individual. He's got an 8-bedroom, 27,000 square foot home.
Okay, yeah, there we go.
That was apparently listed. Yeah, $35 million in 2014. Started working with a company in Boca Raton called Acoustic Innovations, like 12 years ago, before they started building the house, and it took them 4 years to build this thing. It's crazy. So, props to CE Pro. A D-Box controller manipulates hydraulics installed beneath the floorboards, meaning the entire room shakes when anything loud happens on screen.
Okay, I love that. I really do, actually.
JBL Synthesis sound system, which at the time of installation was only used in commercial theaters. The audio system is currently being upgraded to Dolby Atmos specifications, and Bell plans to install a 4K projector. Bell has had over 3,500 films digitized, writes CE Pro, which are stored and streamed through a Kaleidoscape server. And he also spent approximately $35,000 on a Prima Cinema system, allowing him and his family to watch films at home the day they are released in commercial cinemas.
That's how it can be, folks. If you can swing the coin, you never have to go to the movie theater again.
But wait.
There's
it
more?
Gets better. Quote, a wraparound control center surrounds the 11 custom leather chairs in the theater, 8 of which recline into beds, while the doors that open into the theater are exact replicas of the turbo lift doors as seen on the TV show. When someone steps on the circular transporter, the doors open with that familiar whoosh sound.
All right. I'm slowly being worked over here.
The ready room acts as a lobby for the room's home theater, which is inspired by Captain Jean-Luc Picard's office of the same name.
Awesome.
It's just,
that's pretty cool. It shows you that, you know, if you have the resources and stuff, you can do anything.
The ceiling is lighted by a star field made out of hundreds of fiber optic lights that twinkle at different frequencies, depending on how far away they are.
Awesome.
They've got the control center looks like the horn, the thing that Worf sat at in the series.
Excellent.
And the dude's got apparently like $1 million worth of memorabilia stuffed in there. So.
That's cool. It sounds like a sweet, sweet setup, man.
So what gets even better and what really there's people who spend money and you're just like, really? You bought an $11,000 cell phone that's going to be outdated in 8 months?
Well, that I'm less impressed by.
But the best part of this is the last paragraph in the CE Pro article. Despite his love for Star Trek, interestingly, Bell won't be watching the new Star Trek Beyond film at home. For the past 25 years, he's rented a local movie theater for every Star Trek film release and has taken all of his employees, friends, and their children along on opening night. Our theater only holds 11 people, he says. The next one will be bigger.
Nice.
So that's... I just love the fact that it was just completely... Not only was it commercial-grade cinema, and then he just lost his mind on all the Star Trek stuff. I mean, you got to love it. Yeah. You can also search for the Wall Street Journal article, A Diehard Star Trek Fan's $1.5 Million Enterprise. So many plays on words. We don't normally dabble a lot at that far up in the high end, but it was just highly amusing. And, I can't believe Kaleidoscape went down. We've been getting some questions about archiving Blu-rays, and, of course, any DVD kind of disappeared, slice-offed a while ago. If you haven't seen it, redfox.bz is essentially the new any DVD HD.
I've since learned my lifetime subscription to any DVD HD does not apply to Red Fox. So
I thought
have to
they were still working.
Ooh. I could continue to use the last version of... they put out of any DVD forever. But eventually that'll probably stop working. But I actually probably should have just left it alone. But anyway, I did try out the new Red Fox actually a couple days ago to take care of a disc, and it worked just dandy, I must say.
Nice.
Just like the previous versions of any DVD HD did. The guys at Red Fox seem to be continuing on. Yeah.
€59 for a 1-year subscription. A lifetime subscription is €109, which translates into...
It's spent like $130 on it or something like that. And then
approximately $170 for a lifetime. Well, no, that's with Clone DVD Mobile.
Keep an eye out for their sales. They are regularly doing the 20% discounts if you need any of that software.
Yeah, $109. That's for $109 for a euro for a lifetime subscription, €59 for a 1-year subscription. So, but yeah, we're both going to be playing around with that. We will report on our results with Red Fox's Any DVD, which HD, which should be exactly the same as the previous versions,
it
because it
looks and functions.
Appears to be the same crew, just
very identical,
incorporated in another country.
Also discovered that Windows 10 can mount an ISO too, which I'm sure that's been there for a while. But I was like, oh, that's kind of convenient. I can just I don't need to install separate software anymore, just to have the disk mounted, which was pretty cool.
Evan has pixel shift concerns. He wrote ask@avxl.com. And if you haven't emailed ask@avxl.com, please email ask@avxl.com. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us what you want to watch. Tell us what you want to hear us talk about. I sense there's a deep-seated need for a lot of HDMI cable comparisons. That's a joke.
No, there could be.
There could be. Well, there's so many. You know, you go to buy HDMI cables, and there's a lot of options.
It's a challenge. Actually, I like using those amplified cables, and I find that when you're plugging in Samsung's new UHD Blu-ray player to a Samsung TV, it almost doesn't matter what you do to the player or the TV or what cable you're using. It always seems to work, but when you start mixing up other brands suddenly, that's where I've run into compatibility issues.
And you're not
issues.
Talking like I need a $700 HDMI cable that was knitted by gnomes
out of
pure silver.
Honestly, the best cable I can think of off the top of my head is an Amazon Basics. Right. So. Start there. Upgrade only if necessary.
Sometimes those cost as much as $2, $3, $4, maybe $6.
Maybe. And as long as you're dealing with 10 feet or less,
right.
Just about any cable is going to be fine. And why not? I get a 2-pack of 6-footers or 9-footers from Amazon for what? Less than $10, definitely. So.
If you're rewiring your home theater, like I seem to have been for the last 8 months of my life, it's amazing to know that you can find HDMI cables that are like 1.5 feet, 18 inches, or 3 feet long, which means you have a lot less crap to deal with at the back of your home theater totem.
I just bought I bought what I thought was one of those new Redmire cables from Monoprice, and it's only, I want to say it's 3 feet long. A nice shorty one, but usually they're directional, where one end has to be in the source slot and the other has to go into the display. This one, I was just staring at it for a good 5 minutes like an idiot, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. This is not a directional cable. It didn't seem to matter which end I put in, and...
What sorcery is this?
I absolutely loved it, but at first I was like, it's just not labeled. Maybe I should send it back. And I'm like, maybe I should just try it first and see if it actually works, and sure enough, it worked perfect, and... And I was liking that. I got to see if they make them longer at that same uber thickness. I mean, the cable itself is like about 3.5 millimeters with the wrap on it, the nice woven.
Don't buy an HDMI cable because it's thick. In fact, thick HDMI cables will create problems like tearing apart your HDMI jacks in the back of your Blu-ray player, on the back of your portable devices. They will drag stuff off of
those ultra-thin OLEDs. I cringe when I see people using these old school, like, couldn't be much heavy duty or cable.
Right.
And it's just this straight thing coming out the side with the port flexing and everything. And I'm like...
And you shove it against the back of the enclosure and it jams up. And there was this point where cable companies were like, well, we got to make it look thick to justify the cost.
Exactly. You know? That's all it was.
I mean, I've used climbing rope that wasn't as thick.
I mean, I still have some thick cables around, but they aren't the first ones I'm grabbing anymore. Nothing like that for my own stuff.
Yeah.
But those Monoprice ones are perfect, too. Like you said, the 3-foot and shorter versions are great for doing interconnects between stack devices and things like that. Right. And
easy. Amazon Basics, 2-pack
of
6-foot cables.
Yep.
It is $749.
Yeah, I have one of those in my bags.
A single pack of HDMI cables, so high-speed HDMI cables,
$1
is $549.
Yeah, just get the 2-pack.
You know, the 3-foot cables are $649 for a 2-pack.
And those Monoprice ones, depending on the length you need, typically it'll get closer to maybe $2 a foot, but it's often not even that. And I love those ultra-thin ones. Yeah. Ultra-slim, I think they call them.
The Redmire. Oh, my goodness. In any case, Evan has a question. Remember Evan with the pixel shift?
Yeah.
Concerns?
Oh.
He says, I'm trying to work up the guts to get a projector and the 5040 UB may do it. After reading Art Fireman's review, I am confused about pixel shift. It seems like a stopgap. It reminds me of the time when we had 720p sets and 1080p was coming online. Or is the difference much less with pixel shift and true 4K HDR Rec 2020? So what Evan's talking about is the Powerlite Home Cinema 5040 UB.
Brand new.
Brand new.
Nice projector. Should be.
I think I'm going to see that next week.
Oh, sweet.
Demoed.
They have a UBE version, too, that gives you a little extra.
3 LCD projector and what they call 4K enhancement and HDR.
Nice.
So this is an update to the 5030. It's got a $3,000 MSRP. It just started shipping like 3 or 4 days ago. This is a 1080p projector.
Yep. If you counted the mirrors on its, or actually, it's not a DLP, is it?
Yeah.
It's
well,
3LC.
It has what they call 4K enhancement technology. They say it accepts 4K and supports HDCP 2.2 for truly immersive scenes with 4K content, 2,500 ANSI lumens. I like to call it mock 4K, if you will. 5030 is currently dropped down to $2,000, which is a nice price for that projector. But essentially, this is a, you know, you pretty much nailed it. This is a stopgap. There probably never should have been 480 or 720p HD TVs.
But it was all cost and what can we build today, that kind of thing. And when I was when I first heard this, I was thinking, oh, it's got to be like similar to what DLP used to do back in the day, where for the 1080p sets, the chip that was actually driving the image you saw was half the resolution of the TV. And then each pixel or each mirror on the DLP chip, the Texas Instrument technology, it actually could flick to, it could actually angle itself at two specific angles in addition to its off state. So it could reflect light at two positions on the screen in addition to going off where it's not shining any light on the screen.
Right.
So each pixel could flick fast enough to effectively drive the two simultaneous pixels, so they could get away with a chip that was half the resolution, yet still drive full 1080p resolution to the screen. This is doing it with the 3LCD technology, which I always kind of liked because it gets away from single chips, fewer moving parts generally, with the no need for a color wheel or other things like that, like DLP usually needs, unless you're dealing with LED sets or LED projectors. But pixel shifting on a 3LCD, I didn't even know that was really a thing, and it's good to know, actually.
I don't know if it's a thing, but it's a thing that Epson's trying to do.
Yeah. And if you can take your current chip or a modded version of it and, you know, up the resolution, the only way to really see what's going on here is going to be to feed it a 4K signal with a fine 4K test pattern and see what the trade-off is, see how much of that pattern gets through, how much of that resolution, be it a zone plate type thing or just a frequency spread, just something that shows you everything, really maxes the signal out and lets you see where degradation's occurring, if any is even perceivable. But I would assume you're losing a little something, but I'll bet you it is delivering better than 1080p resolution to your eyeballs. So that could be pretty cool. And I've always liked Epson's projectors, and seeing that 5040 out at a similar price tag with just more oomph makes me a happy camper. And I noticed the 5030, if you're still interested in that, that price dropped nicely. I want to say it was under $2,000, which I'm not sure if it's ever been that low, but that's still a solid projector. And the UBE, the ultra black version, maybe they're all UBE. Anyway, that was that's terrific tech and good. Good to see that. And true, the only true 4K projectors that are reasonably priced that I'm seeing are from Sony at this point, unless you get into
when you say reasonably, you're looking $4,000 to $6,000.
Or they started about $7,000.
Okay.
About $7,000 on up. And then if you had the money, if money is less of an issue, I'd be looking over at folks like Digital Projection and those guys who do some amazing, amazing hardware.
Which doesn't quite get you to Boca Raton Deck of the Enterprise money, but you can easily spend $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, $50,000 on a projector. The review that Evan was referring to is from projectorreviews.com. Art Fireman being one of the contributors there, or maybe the editor-in-chief. I apologize, Mr. Fireman. I should know that. Mr. Fireman says, quote, looking at the 4K content, it looked great, for, as I already learned from Epson's LS10000, that while true 4K is true 4K, and this isn't true 4K, pixel shifting combined with 4K content and some great image processing can still deliver a picture that is immediately perceived as easily sharper and more detailed than anything pure 1080p. I've come to appreciate HDR from watching the Sony 4K VW665 ES, that's a $15,000 projector, and the $4,000 JVC, and it looked even better in Epson's facility because their theater is just superior to mine. By the way, we really like the JVC RS4000, but the HC5040UB, that's the Epson projector, is going to give it some competition for $1,000 less. So,
sweet.
Yeah, the JVC RS400 is kind of your entry-level 4K projector at $4,000. You know, if I would say, Evan, if you really want 4K, I'd probably wait a year, you know, to buy a 4K projector.
But this would be a good stopgap measure. It's going to look great.
Yeah.
And it'll allow you to get all your other gear set up and hammered out and make sure everything's playing nice. And
you know, and it'll do its best with HDR, which is the thing we really like about 4K content.
The difference between the UB and the UBE version of all of Epson's projectors, the E at the end, if you get a little E at the end, that includes that wireless HDMI.
Got it.
Tech.
Nothing wrong with that.
So pricing it out, and that's something you need. Consider it. But it says, actually, it says it has for this projector support for DCI and HDR content. I have seen a lot of projectors this year, like that last JVC I looked at. It could do DCI color, which is exactly the color spec they're using for all your 4K movies nowadays. It gets wrapped up in that 2020 container, but what everyone's actually using and shooting for at the moment are something called DCI color, which a lot of TVs nowadays will hit in the high 90s, like 95, 99%, getting closer to 99%. And I'm willing to bet by next year that'll be something where every TV, well, not every TV, but a lot of the premium TVs will easily exceed that, moving closer to that full 2020 coverage, along with just incredible more brightness. Got to get the brightness detail up there.
Got to get the brightness detail.
But I love it. It has 10 presets as well for the lens system, which is awesome, in case you're thinking of doing maybe a 22x9 or a ultra widescreen setup in addition to your 16x9 viewing. You can have it zoom and focus automatically and save that, which is always handy. We've talked about that on a couple episodes ago about somebody wanting to do a widescreen setup. 4 HDMI inputs. Nice. Nice.
Good stuff.
Oh, there is a 6040 UB. That one's in black. That's apparently the only difference. And you can't get the 6040.
Brings the whole room together.
Yeah. I prefer black projectors. Although, hey, depends on the room.
It depends
whatever
on the color
you need
of the
to
ceiling.
Match.
Yeah. If your ceiling isn't black, you don't want a black projector. Unless you want people to know you have a projector.
And if you were going to build out a theater room, a white ceiling is not ideal.
Anything that's going to reflect light.
But less is better.
I'll just convince my wife to do flat black on the ceiling in the living room. She'll love that. At AJ Smith tweets, quick question for AVXL. Any network ever broadcast live in 1080p? Are we going to compressed 4K first? You were saying that the best live broadcast so far in North America was Nulion's 4K 60 hertz UFC 200 fight, which
yeah.
I think took place this weekend, right?
No, that was 202.
Okay.
That was crazy, by the way. That was I was standing in a crowd of about 1,000 people watching that fight, and that was nuts. this, on the other hand, is, let's see. Yeah, New Lion did that 4K 60 broadcast, and that was only for select Sony TVs. I think it was very limited, so I'm sure that was like their trial run for it. But everyone who watched it thought it was epic in terms of image quality and presentation and everything. They could do 1080p 60 live streaming today, and there is actually some 1080p formats in the current ATSC spec for broadcast,
right?
Like 1080p 24 and 1080p 30, I think, is the max that can be encoded. But nobody. I've never seen that actually going over the air.
Right.
1080i is still the limit. It'll probably be.
Is that a bandwidth limitation, essentially?
It's a trade-off. They would rather not spend the bits
right.
when they're squeezing stuff already. There is a lot of streaming content, though, you can get from just about every provider. Pay-per-view type content and other things that are either being 1080p or 4K. That's available now. And one of the good things I've always liked about 1080i, and it may not be obvious, but as a broadcast format, but your TV has that film mode switch in there, and as long as anytime you have interlaced content like 1080i, that's when that activates, and it'll look at that content, and it'll say, hey, this is encoded in 1080i 60, but guess what? We see that it was originally, you know, sports content or something at, say, 30 or 60 frames per second. We can convert that to 1080p 30. But even better, for the 24p movies they show on TV, when they're broadcasting it in 1080i, if that film mode's enabled, it will actually deinterlace it and recreate that 1080p 24 viewing experience. It should be almost perfect. So there are some advantages to that beautiful 1080i format that I still respect today. But but I don't watch a lot of broadcast TV, so I'm like, except
why?
For sports.
Why do you not
and
watch
even that,
broadcast TV?
Well, MLB gets my money. But so, yeah, there's not a lot of live 1080p. And I don't see progressive, anything above 720p really being the norm until we get that next generation broadcast format called ATSC3. And I said before, that's probably still a couple years off. And because we still need tuner hardware. But what ATSC3 will bring is the ability to do cool stuff like 4K HDR. and wide color gamut and many other cool things over similar bandwidth that we're currently using today for HD delivery. So
nice.
Looking forward to that, but that's still a few years off, really. We're still getting the...
hold your breath.
The UHD Blu-ray experience ramping up with a few new players and stuff like that, but...
The mind boggles.
Yes.
There you go, AJ. Last week was a highly amusing week for Blu-rays. The Angry Birds movie came out on Blu-ray.
Cha-ching!
On UHD, too, so you can enjoy the birds in 4K.
I bet you it looks beautiful.
For those of us who remember the 80s or are in 80s nostalgia, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension is presented on Blu-ray, courtesy of Shout Select. That's from Shout Factory. They did an AVC encoded 1080p transfer, 235 to 1. The folks at Blu-ray.com said, a sticker affixed to the shrink wrap on this release states, quote, the cleverly crazed cult classic is on Blu-ray for the first time, which is kind of weird because it came out in the UK over a year ago. Blu-ray.com says, this one looks pretty much exactly the same as the UK version that came out. But if you're a fan of Buckaroo Banzai, and I can't imagine why you aren't, that is now out on Blu-ray. For 80s nostalgia junkies, there's also The Money Pit came out last week, and all the American Ninja movies, which were a staple on cable. I want to say HBO back in 85. Like, they did like five of them.
Oh, man. The only thing I really know about that movie is they just so happened to be filming one of them, and I don't remember which one it was, in the town I lived in. And it was quite the hilarious.
I think the first one was probably the best. I'll quote Blu-ray.com again. In American Ninja, Michael Didikoff plays American G.I. Joe, who, based in the Philippines, gets hip to a crooked arms racket involving none other than the military itself. There's no end to the rib-cracking opportunities Didikoff encounters as he knee-knocks his way through a host of bad guys, rescues a lady in distress, and ventures to thwart the thieving arms vendors.
Was he the star in all of them? Because he was the actor in the one when they were shooting in my town. And they did a lot of cool stunt work and stuff that I really did. That was fun to watch.
You know, I apologize. I do not have a tighter lock on Mr. Didikoff's
why am I even asking?
History. Well, you know, look at this. I will filmography, this. Hard Target 2, Navy SEALs versus Zombies, Electric Boogaloo, In Her Defense, Black Thunder, Jerry Springer and Ringmaster, Bounty Hunters 2, Strategic Command, Cobra, Bounty Hunters, Moving Targets. I'm reading backwards. Cobra, The Human Shield, Air America, which should have been a much better movie than it was. Yeah, it looks like he was in American Ninja 4. American Ninja 2, American Ninja, Bachelor Party, Uncommon Valor, Tron.
No way.
Neil Simon's I Ought to Be in Pictures. And, of course, the incredibly epic Enter the Ninja.
Enter the Ninja.
Platoon Leader. Avenging Force. A lot going on here.
A lot of there's a theme to that career.
I do like Navy SEALs versus Zombies. I had no idea that existed.
Okay.
Well, you know, one can only imagine the opportunities there. Man, also this week on Blu-ray, we're recording this on August 26th, 1988's Midnight Run, which is a fantastic movie.
Cool. That was a good flick.
Yeah, it's still absolutely funny as hell. Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. One of them is a bounty hunter, one of them is on the lam, and it's unspeakably funny. The Nice Guys just came out. Netflix's series Narcos just came out on Blu-ray. The Jungle Book's coming out next week. And as a complete side note, there's just too many good things on Netflix right now.
There really is a lot. There's so much good 4K content, too, on there, I'm noticing, that I just haven't caught up on yet. A lot of series, a lot of binge-watching to be had.
Oh, my goodness. Tim had a question he sent to Ask at AVXL, and I'm going to do his summary in a TLDR format, his quote, not mine. He's got like $300 or $400 of Best Buy gift cards from family members. He wants to upgrade to a 50 or 55-inch HD TV. He's not too concerned about 4K yet. He's got a bright room with windows. And he's looking for a television he can buy at Best Buy rather than Amazon, because he has this stack of Best Buy gift cards. And one of the nice things that's going on with Amazon right now is a couple years ago, they decided that they didn't want to be Circuit City or CompUSA, and they didn't want to go out of business. And they, you know, got their collective stuff together, to use a highly scientific business term. I think I may have moved.
The TV is listening to
us. Oh, you know what
us.
It is? I'm speaking, and all of a sudden, the television over here on our right, this Samsung, is trying to recognize my speech and is desperately wants to do the right thing for
I've
us.
Never seen it do that before.
Sound off. Turn the volume up.
And it goes to Channel 9.
You didn't want to watch that Blu-ray movie. Just
Blu-ray. Now it goes to Channel 8170.
Input 3.
Input 3.
If that works, I'd be...
Input 3.
It's horrible technology.
Shh. No, we're going to get it. It's Blu-ray. Input options. Death to marsupials. Sound on.
It got one, finally. There. Oh, sitting here waiting like, what?
I'm just curious how that enabled. It must have said the magic code word or something. I probably must have reset that TV in.
That's hysterical. So,
hi, TV.
No.
So if you haven't, first of all, if you're looking to get ears or eyes on some high-end gear, the Magnolia Center's inside of... a Best Buy are pretty nice. They actually have design centers now where they have people who will lay out in the Magnolia Centers where they will actually physically like do all of the drawings and the stuff you need to do to get permits and design and engineer and figure out the wiring for
totally.
Theater systems. Not and you can also, all Magnolias. But
no, but you can also play around with some of that gear too, yeah. Like the automation systems, and to see like, you know, maybe I don't need that. Or, yeah. Oh, I didn't realize this was could be done. And yeah, and they make it really easy for you.
You know, and the, you know, Best Buy's, the kind of makeup of the stores has shifted a lot. There's still car stereo equipment, usually in one back corner, because they still sell a lot of car stereo equipment because people still replace janky old car stereos.
I'm on the Crutchfield website all the time looking at everything.
I love Crutchfield. Props to Crutchfield and keep their MSRP prices. But Best Buy... you know, so they don't keep as much Blu-ray, and they keep a lot less CD stock than they used to. The computer section's bigger, but most important of all, with all the televisions in there, is that they are working very hard to be, at least if in the neighborhood, if not outright competitive with Amazon and other online sources. So, you know, there used to be what I will affectionately call a Best Buy tax for buying at one of their retail stores,
yeah.
Which was paying a lot more than you could to have it delivered to your door. But because they've worked really hard to kind of reduce their overhead and kind of streamline things, they are fairly competitive. I mean, it's worth, you know, shopping around and double checking, but chances are the television there is going to be in the neighborhood of what it would cost at Costco or at Amazon.com or anywhere else. So
some other places, though, like I'll always recommend people check out a place like Costco if you're already a member there, because they will do things like double your warranty. Mm-hmm. And remember, too, if you buy stuff on a credit card, most credit cards will extend the warranty beyond what is listed from the manufacturer. And read the fine print carefully, mm-hmm. but just don't assume that because something is a year out of warranty that you had no coverage left, especially if you purchased it in one of these ways. Always worth investigating and checking those numbers. I do still prefer, for especially the larger TVs, mm-hmm. what's the point of going to a store that had that TV shipped to it, rather than I'd rather have that TV just shipped right. directly to me. Less handling, less potential for me to mess it up, or maybe I don't have a truck to move it, that kind of thing.
You know, it's kind of crazy.
Fear not.
The thing I'd watch out for, and Robert's probably going to poke me with a sharp stick when I say this, but there are a lot of 4K TVs right now. For like, you know, here's a 50-inch LG, their 5500 series. It's 4K, 2160p for $499. Samsung, you know, they're
the LH5750 from LG as well. That's under 500, mm-hmm. and that's a 2016 model. Definitely 4K, and it probably has decent HDR support. Probably a very bright picture, but at the same point, oh wait. Maybe this is 1080p TV. So never mind. It's not 4K. It is 1080p, but that's pretty good value and great ratings on it too.
Yeah.
I'm looking at.
I don't want you to buy a 4K TV that isn't HDR. That said, there are a lot of good prices on 4K TVs in the 50 or 65 inch range. That aren't HDR.
And totally.
It'll just quadruple your pixels, and your 1080p content will probably look just fine.
Especially at that size, I find the difference between 4K and 1080p, it's not as night and day. However, if your eyesight's fine, you're going to notice some differences, but
right.
you'll have some 4K streaming options then. But at that size, stick to value.
Right.
Yeah. Like you
said,
things are going to get so much better in terms of HDR for next year.
Right.
And things are still being
Yeah.
Smoothed out. Content's getting better and more of it.
So I'm up on the website. I'm looking at like 100. They got 120 4K TVs listed. And as soon as I click on the high dynamic range button, that drops to 62.
A lot are, but then it becomes a difficult thing to differentiate between them in terms of what is the brightness, what's the max brightness out mm-hmm. of this? Because that's really what you're paying for this year. Unless you're going OLED, in which case you're going for that perfect black, and
right.
the absolute brightness isn't such a concern. But for the new TVs, all the LCDs, it's all about what kind of brightness level are you going to get, and then
right.
the usability of it, that's something to keep in mind, too. I hate to keep mentioning Samsung all the time, but this new interface compared to last year is so much better and easier to use and right. faster. I truly do appreciate that. And then for things like, other features too, like a lot of these new TVs I'm seeing for 2016, the HDR premium TVs will also convert your non-HDR, your standard dynamic range content, SDR, into an HDR-like experience. So I was watching a Blu-ray the other day on the KS9800, and then I realized, oh, this thing does have a convert from SDR to HDR mode. Let's see how that looks. It is definitely not the artist's intent, but it was compelling. And if you have one of these HDR TVs, you'll never see that full brightness.
Right.
You're seeing standard brightness on everything until it kicks into HDR mode anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at like, Vizio 50-inch class, their M50D1, that's $750. Because I wouldn't buy a 43-inch 4K TV.
No, I've dealt with a few of those. That's definitely too small for
M55.
Unless you're going to use it for a monitor or something, but...
Yeah, well, here's a 49-inch Samsung, 55-inch Sony 4K Ultra HD TV with high-range black. Oh, I have to see that. It's going to be about $900, $950. Man, if you're trying to keep it under 1,000, I'd say look for a 1080p television.
Oh, no, and if his budget's like about $500, yeah.
Right.
Don't just forget 4K for this year.
Okay.
And don't try to... Don't expect the world at value. Pick what's most important. Is it going to be the screen size? Is it going to be input lag because you're a gamer?
Right.
Those are the things. Focus on whatever that prime thing is you're going to be using that set for and stick to that. Because all of these LCDs are going to put out a bright picture. As long as you don't put your foot through it, it's going to last you five. Oh, we had a couple TVs my dad has. He has a plasma that's like 15 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an LCD that's over 10 or 11 years old now. It's still going. He was just pleased as punch about that. So,
yeah, it's pretty. I mean, there's 55 to 59 inches is kind of a big.
A lot of good options.
Well, it's also crazy. Like, I'm not sure I would buy the Insignia house brand from Best Buy, but you're looking at $380 for a 55-inch 1080p TV.
I've had nothing but good performance and characteristics when I've tested their TVs.
I immediately want to apologize. There's a 55-inch LG.
It's been a while, but the Insignia group was Best Buy's house brand,
right.
and they had a great group of engineers in their corporate headquarters who hammer on their sets as good as anyone I've seen, so... If you see it and you're wondering about that name brand, yeah, just keep that in the back of your mind. There is that other brand I mentioned, too, from them called Dynex, which is way more value, but I don't think they put quite the... if you're into the picture quality side, I'd lean more toward the Insignia.
This is pretty awesome, right? Sony's 55 KDL 55W650D, that's $600.
Yeah. That's a, that would be a sweet 1080p TV.
And the UN55Js from Samsung are
Android TV built into that
are
too.
Way under $600. The UN50s are $549. The LG 55LH5750, that's $499. Those are all 50 or 50. Those are mostly 55-inch TVs. Now I want to see what the...
And if you've got a TV you're kind of on the fence about, that you have currently, consider adding something like a Chromecast or something to it that increases its functionality. Like, yeah. I love being able to stream anything from my desktop or my mobile right to the screen on the TV and watch it in great quality.
60-inch Samsung UN60J6200 for $699. Sony's KDL-60W.
That sounds a little overpriced, but that TV was fantastic, man. That thing calibrated so well, that 6200 series. That was a winner from last year, just in terms of you get surprising good image quality out of it after calibration. And it's not bad out of the box either, but I was just like, holy cow, this thing just dialed right in.
Yeah, that's selling for Prime.
Beautifully.
That's $697 on Amazon. So that might be in that sort of end of life cycle.
Yeah.
So that's price wise, it's right in there. But yeah, I mean, you're for, you know, for $700, you can get a decent 60-inch 1080p TV. You know, that Sony's nice for $600. You're looking at like $600 for a nice 55-inch TV. That's Samsung UN55J.
Nothing wrong with that. 2015 model, but still solid.
It ain't changed that much. You know, there's a 55-inch LG, the 55LH 5750 that's selling for $500. Okay, that's on sale this week, down $100, but
still,
that's a fantastic deal. Or you could spend $7,700 on a Sunbright TV, which is the...
sealed for the outdoors.
Yeah, sorry.
Guaranteed. Those are interesting.
Yeah, weather-resistant design.
I've seen a lot of TVs without any kind of additional protection on them exposed to the elements, as long as it was under like an overhang of some kind.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
But not much more than that. I mean, extreme heat, occasional splashes. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised those things still work, but still.
Electronics are tougher than you think. So hopefully, Tim, that gives you some good ideas to look at. And do not worry about buying from Best Buy. Definitely comparison shop, but chances are their prices are going to be in line. We had a viewer comment from Pete who wrote askatavxl.com. He says, you should do some testing on 8 versus 4 ohm. It'd be very interesting. Shouldn't be much sound quality difference if the amp is good, but yes, you could destroy the amplifier if it's driven too hard. Total harmonic distortion can go up as resistance drops. Running them as small, that's a setting on a lot of AVRs, and sending low frequencies to the sub has worked for me, even at very high volumes. Love the show. Thanks, Pete. I'm going to wait until I have some speakers. I have actually lit the woofer on a speaker on fire.
Oh, yeah.
Back in college.
That's a good tip, though. And as soon as we talked about that on that episode, I immediately was like, okay, I got to go read a few articles about this and get my head wrapped around it a little bit better. So,
yeah, you know, it's we'll do just a whole episode.
It will
on
work. Potential for fire does increase, but there you go.
Well, no, there's a certain amount of experimenting. I'm a little, having literally like lit a speaker on fire once. Oops. But I will wait till I have a pair of speakers. Right now, I don't have any speakers I want to destroy, so I'll keep my eyes open for some garage sale opportunities. It's also getting kind of hard to find 4-ohm speakers.
That's true.
You know,
they're not. Yeah, they're usually at the higher end. If somebody's claiming, "Hey, no problem, run 4-ohm through this." And
yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, let's table our 4 versus 8-ohm discussion.
Yes.
Until
we have some hardware in front of us.
We have some hardware and some flames and
make
stuff.
Squeal.
Oh my goodness.
Or not.
Yeah, with that, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get Robert on the road because he has a television to calibrate. You are continuing your saga of figuring out why HDR is a nightmare to calibrate.
It really is tough, man. And not only do you need special hardware and everything just to get it all into the modes and to be able and have a meter that can handle like super bright imagery without frying itself, it's kind of nuts. However, I did have a chance to also calibrate a pro monitor this week using a lookup table generated for it.
Really?
Where you basically put your meter on the front of the monitor, you run through the software, and it generates a correction file that's, in this case, directly loaded into the monitor itself. And that way you don't have to deal with external boxes or anything like that. And I have to say, the results were fantastic. What a great way to optimize a display. If you are using a Pro display and you haven't had a custom lookup table, LUT, they call them LUTs for short. If you haven't had that done to your Pro monitor or any monitor that supports it, do it. And that's on the same level, I'd say, with PC users who may have color gear and they haven't done like a color profile that they load through the OS. That, too, will also do a lot for it. But these custom lookup tables are just a fantastic way to quickly. I created a preset for 709 editing and then another one for DCI editing on this monitor happened to be capable of it. If you do happen to ever mess with lookup table boxes, one small tip to remind everyone is that the display should be set in its widest color gamut. Usually you end up resetting the display, put it in its highest or widest color gamut, and then let the box constrain everything. Make sure it can well exceed what you need, and then the box will bring it all back into target. And that can work fantastic, and it can be a very automated way to do a setup too, which is quick and easy. And I also discovered, finally, that those LG OLEDs actually use separate calibration setups for the HD and the HDR and the Dolby Vision. So you have like a three-way calibration on those things if you really want to do everything on there.
Do everything.
And speaking of Dolby Vision, just a quick shout-out to the folks over at Flat Panels HD. Just a long, they've been there forever doing great stuff related to pixels and info. But they have they just published a new Dolby Vision FAQ. And frequently asked questions. And it's a good rundown of the current state of what's out there, what's coming. And I think people would enjoy just checking that out. And they're good folks to support anyway. I've used them or their tools. They had some free web tools I used to use when I tested displays on notebooks and things like that, some flash-based stuff back in the day. And still, they're still doing great work. So
there you have it.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of supporting, this podcast is brought to you through, well, people like you contributing to our monthly fund at patreon.com/AVXL. We're going to try to do this advertisement free, but we have to figure out a way to do it where it doesn't compromise my ability to feed my children and Robert's ability to pay his rent, amongst other things. So we're going to ask you nicely, if you can spare a buck, if you can spare $5, fire them on out, patreon.com/AVXL. It's a pretty cool way to get the audience to support the work they love, and we don't have to worry about chasing after advertising, and we don't have to go do this at a big company. It's going to cancel us just as it gets good again. Because
we've been there a few times.
Once or twice. But, hey, we also want to thank each and every one of you for listening.
Without a doubt.
Because it's fun for us to do. And we are curious to know what you are curious about. What are your questions? What products are you looking towards? Are you thinking about upgrading anything towards the holidays? You're going to be doing some shopping. Fire out those questions. Ask at avxl.com, at Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton. And we will catch you next week.
Are you ready for some football?
No. Okay. I haven't watched a full football game in 10 years. Nope. I got kids, man.
I hear you.
I can't watch football the way I was taught to watch football with children in the house.
Everything's background noise for me now.
Yeah. You know, it's one thing to scream at the television when the dog's in the house. It's something entirely again to scream at the television when you scare the
What? A household without fantasy league play?
No fantasy league play.
My friends are so deep in that.
My kids play with wooden swords they made in the backyard wailing on each other.
Well, no, that's
There's no fantasy in
That's good,
world.
Clean fun.
That's how you train warriors.
No sticking in the eyes, though. keep it below the neck.
Well, we did get them goggles to wear while they're playing with their Nerf guns. Because Nerf guns are much scarier than they used to be.
Yeah. We didn't have goggles back when I was a kid.
Well, they also didn't have modified Nerf guns that'll, like,
Well, we used worse. We were idiots. I'm amazed I still have two functioning eyes.
I was going to say, you were doing BB gun fights.
Most of my organs.
BB gun fights.
Yes. Let's not even say those two words together.
BB gun target practice in a highly structured environment with full command and understanding of the four fundamental laws of firearms handling. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we are safe and prudent here at AVXL.
I'm down with that.
And if you're trying to figure out how to get a 700-watt surround sound system in your dorm room, we want to help you do that, too. Oh, my goodness. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We'll see you next week.